Welcome to another episode of Hacks and Jacks Pitcherless Family. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here as always with senior analyst Scott Chu. Scott, episode 152. How are we doing? This is June 11th. Finally feeling the summer vibes?
Yeah, sure. It's hot as blazes here and there's a tornado watch, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, upstate New York, we suffered through some much needed rain, actually. We got a massive band of thunderstorms came through. So if I cut out at any point, it's probably because our house got struck by lightning or something crazy. But
I think it's either El Nino or El Nina. I don't remember which one.
One of those Spanish weather phenomena.
El Nino. It's El Nino.
There we go. Is that a nickname of one of the players we're going to talk about later? We'll have to wait and see.
I can't believe it's not.
Like, right?
You would think at any given time somebody in baseball would be nicknamed El Nino, but they're just not.
We should start calling one of the guys on the list El Nino, like someone who just pops up every summer and has like a crazy hot streak. And then like maybe that's what we just start calling hitters who like are streaky power hitters that get hot and then go away.
You mean like all the streaky lefties in the taxi squad? Like that's all of them.
Yeah, just start calling that the El Nino squad.
Yeah, it's El Nino. It occurs every 2 to 7 months and typically lasts 9 to 12 days.
That is on point. That needs to start being the El Nino section. That's too good. Let's jump into some news and notes for the week. Recording on Thursday, June 11th, we've had a couple of, I won't call them major injuries, but significant injuries to major fantasy contributors. Ronald Acuna is back on the IL with a hamstring injury, and the streaky hot O'Neill Cruz heads to the IL with a metacarpal issue. Learned that means fingers. He's got some finger fractures, non-displaced finger fractures, though. So those two guys are to the IL. Scott, if you're missing one or more outfielders, where are you looking?
Yeah. So hopefully with Ronald Acuna, you've sort of just held on to somebody all the time because he's sort of knocking on the door of not quite making it to 100 games. Right. So if you're looking for an outfielder, I think the number one guy, and we'll talk about him a little more later, but if you're in a shallower league and people haven't noticed what Jung-Hoo Lee is doing, that'd be a big one. If you're looking for power to replace O'Neill Cruz's home runs, I think, a guy who's heating up is Jack Caglione. He's kind of doing some stuff that's interesting. If no one has scooped up Bryce Eldridge yet, that would be an obvious one. He's not in the outfield, but Matt Chapman's been really hot. I don't know how long that's going to last. It's too bad you can't just go get every guy that's going to play in Las Vegas. Because that was just a ridiculous showing. And the only reason I bring it up pretty much off the cuff is because I do want to remind people that is the way it goes in the minor league Las Vegas park that is outdoors, that has a humidor, but maybe not doing the same level of humidifying that a major league ballpark will do. That new park they're building in Vegas is indoors with climate control. Right. So they're actually going to battle for that, like that dryness. In fact, if you remember, while Coors has always been known because it's incredibly dry and the high altitude, Chase Field used to be easily the number two hitter's park. And it's because of the dryness. And what it actually does is take moisture, like the ball has less moisture in it and moisture is heavy. So the balls were literally lighter. That made them move a little less when they got pitched and made them fly further when you hit them. Right. So you're dealing with a lot of that outdoors in Vegas, right? They can keep it in the humidor all they want. Once it starts getting out in the air, like, yeah, it's a problem. So it's not going to be like that in future years. So if you were kind of, looking at Dynasty being like, oh man, these Oakland guys are going to be ripping it. I mean, that park will likely play hitter friendly just because the dimensions aren't very big, but it's not going to be like what you saw in the outdoor park for the Vegas. Heck, one of the home runs that was hit wasn't even a home run in Sacramento, right? Yeah, that Las Vegas ballpark, it's also the second most hitter, first or second most hitter friendly park in the Pacific Coast League, which is the most hitter friendly league in like all of baseball, like all across all the minors. So it's like one of the most hitter friendly parks in the country. So I thought it was just wild. They were like, yeah, let's put a bunch of pro teams in there and see what happens. Well, and you saw what happened. Just million home runs.
Jonah Heim's home run over the weekend would have been a home run in 0 out of 30 major league ballparks. It was a home run in that Las Vegas minor league park.
And that includes Sacramento, which is being used as a minor league ballpark or as a major league ballpark. It was wild. So that there's, you know, by the time you're listening to this, there's one more series in Las Vegas. You should stream every lefty or basically anyone who's going to get regular bats. Just stream all of them. Stream all of them. Anyone you can get anywhere where you have like an open roster spot, just put them in because that field is silly. And bench every pitcher that has to go there. I wouldn't trust anybody.
Oh, we'll take a look at some of the guys making their way either to the majors for the first time or back to the majors. The Yankees called back up Spencer Jones in order to replace Aaron Judge, who was placed on the IL. The White Sox bring up Braden Montgomery, no relation to teammate Colson Montgomery. And Royce Lewis is back in the majors with the Twins. Any of those three, I know we've talked about Spencer Jones a little bit, but any of those three transactions interesting to you as a fantasy manager in 12-team leagues?
So Braden Montgomery ended up getting ranked in the 120s-ish. There's some intrigue there. He's a, you know, fairly well-regarded prospect. He's certainly got some power. We'll see how the strikeout rate goes. Just, you know, he's made a lot of big steps this season just in the high minors, and we'll see if they translate to the major leagues. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. It's really hard to predict which way it's going to go. So he's certainly at least worth a stream in the outfield. Again, if you just lost Cruz or Acuna or something like that and are looking for a spark plug, he could do that. He's not going to run so much, maybe a little bit, but that's not, you know, not quite to the level of those two guys. And, you know, Spencer Jones, he specifically doesn't interest me. Like, he did just hit his first major league home run fairly recently. So that was cool. And he does, like, look, he hits the ball super duper hard. He just rarely hits it. So it's just, it doesn't really work out. Like, you can't really, like, the StatCast page will be like all red, but that's because he also barely ever hits the ball. Like, that whole contact part will be dark blue because he just doesn't do it. But if there's a name that I'd be stashing right now, especially, you know, if you do need some speed or some pop, and no one else has done it yet, Jason Dominguez should be back fairly soon off the IL. He is likely the main beneficiary of playing time when he's ready to go. He was showing some promising signs when before he went down with injury. I think they'd much rather give him an extended look than maybe Spencer Jones, who, I mean, maybe Spencer Jones is something someday. You know, he's got Aaron Judge size, that's for sure. But Dominguez gives them a better defender and at this stage of their career, at this stage of his career, a better hitter. So I think they'll bring him in and he could be a real spark plug. And again, I think he'll be back this month quite soon. I believe he's on a rehab right now. So I'd go and grab Jason Dominguez, you know, keep him on my IL until he's ready to go.
Well, several players coming back from the IL this week. Some of them could be major contributors in fantasy leagues. You have Jose Altuve returning for the Astros, Corey Seager and Wyatt Langford returning for the Rangers. Lars Nootbaar is back for the Cardinals, and Matt Shaw is back for the Cubs. You know, obviously varying levels of fantasy relevance among that crew. Anything you've noticed of those five guys?
Yeah, so I think what surprised me the most of these five guys is Corey Seager and Wyatt Langford landed back on the hitter list, but it was at 67 and 85, respectively. So 67 for Corey Seager, 85 for Wyatt Langford. I thought I'd end up ranking them higher, but when I just looked at how poorly they've hit the ball so far this season, and for a lot of the time last season, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't raise them higher up. Corey Seager's the harder one because he's been so good so many times. Like, we named a stat after him. Like, we pitcher list didn't, but somebody did, just to talk about the ability to like make decisions like in and out of the zone. Corey Seager is an amazing hitter. He just hasn't looked like one, and he didn't look like one all the time last year. He still carries massive injury risk. So he sits at 65. I don't think he should be on waiver wires, but it's not quite the safety that you hoped for. And you weren't even hoping for that much safety to begin with. You were just hoping that when healthy, he'd rake. He hasn't done that. So that's a little concerning. And Wyatt Langford has all this potential that's mostly looked like 2 or 3 week flashes and then like a month of disappointment. So again, he is someone I think that absolutely should be on rosters, maybe not starting him necessarily in shallower leagues, but someone should roster him hoping that he, you know, he was at one time, the number one or number two overall prospect, very highly regarded, plenty of power. There, you know, early projections like, oh yeah, this is a 30 home run dude. And now we're just like, man, I hope I can get a 2020 guy out of this. Right. And again, prospect journeys aren't linear. I mean, Jordan Walker's just now breaking through. And you know, he came up quite some time ago. You never know when it's going to click. There's no clear sign. If anyone tells you there is a clear sign it's going to happen, they're lying. Because either they're wrong or they're lying. Either they know they're lying and they just want to sound cool, or they've made it up. Because if you did have that, if you knew how to tell when a player was going to break out, you would not work for PitcherList. You would not work for whatever website. You would not just randomly post on Twitter. You would be paid a ton of money by a major league team because they haven't figured it out either, right? They just kind of hope for the best. They know more than many of us do, but they don't know that much, right? In the grand scheme of things, we have like if my best guess is like a 5% chance, theirs is like 10, right? Twice as good, 10's a lot, but in the grand scheme of things, it's just not very much. So, you know, we don't know when that's going to happen. Lars Nootbaar made the back of the list. He had a really, you know, first two games he came out firing. He's more of a high floor guy than a guy with a ceiling. He doesn't hit for a ton of power. His, you know, he's a little bit better in points leagues where he probably should be somebody's last outfielder, but you know, not a ton to get excited about here with Nootbaar, especially because he's a little bit further down in the order. He used to bat like 1-2-3, but now with Ivan Herrera and Alec Burleson and Jordan Walker and JJ Weatherholt, there's just no room for him up there. So batting like fifth, yeah, he'll get a couple of RBI probably, but it's not going to be anything special.
We'll move on to our feel good story of the week out of the major leagues. Former Oriole, so this is close to my heart, former Oriole and current Angel, Trey Mancini makes his way back to the major leagues for the first time since 2023. He gets a couple starts for the Angels at first base this week. Probably not fantasy relevant, even in like AL only leagues, because who knows how long he's going to stick at first base for the Angels. But, you know, to see him battle cancer and get back to the major leagues and then fall out of the major leagues and come back again, you know, he was great with the Orioles. He was one of the guys that kind of the only good thing that fans had to latch onto for a couple years there. But great to see him back in the majors.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you're in a deep AL only. You're just looking for at-bats, right? Trey Mancini started twice out of three games. So he's going to play. Like, again, I don't know how much long-term, but he's a righty. You know, so, and he got two starts against a righty. I'm sure he'll start against the lefties. Deep AL only, what's the worst that could happen? Right? At least he plays.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk risers and fallers in Scott's top 150 hitters list after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with Scott Chu. As always, we're talking hitters on pitcher list. We're diving into Scott's top 150 hitters list. Scott puts out a rankings list of 150 hitters every week. It is out on Thursday. You can check it out on pitcherlist.com. As always, Scott, we're going to jump right into some of the risers from this week. And the first two names that popped out to me, two Brewers in the top 15, Jackson Chourio at 14 and Bryce Turang at 15. Both of them had an amazing weekend out in Vegas in that rinky-dink park. How much of this rise is due to, you know, park factor, and how much is due to them actually being good hitters over the course of the week?
Yeah, and that's a fair point. It's actually something I call out in the article. Like, hey, look, I would have moved these guys up even if they didn't just like get to go play in Vegas, they would have moved up. You know, you have to remember that Chourio was once like the top prospect in all of baseball, right? The Brewers always seem to have one of the best hitters, one of the best prospects in baseball. It's Jesus Mate now. It was Jackson Chourio then. He came up super early. Look, in his last 17 games, so, you know, the Vegas stuff plus before that, his OPS is over 1,000. Right? The walk rate steadily going up. Doesn't matter what park you're in, right? Walk rate, still a big deal. He's got the 5 home runs, 2 stolen bases. Look, he put up back-to-back 2020 seasons. I think he'll do it again in less time. Jackson Chourio, this dude's 22 years old, like barely, right? He turned 22 just before the season started, and he continues to mature at the major league level. And like, if I think the baseline for him, the floor for a full season is what we saw in 24 and 25. We're starting to see the next step now. I think a lot of people wondered what is the next step, because like what you saw, the 2020, you know, 21 home runs, 20 stolen bases, 270 average, like that's good. But I thought you guys said that he'd be great. And it's like, well, okay. So at this rate, you know, we're looking at a guy who could hit like 25, maybe even 30 home runs by the time he's, you know, fully in a groove and hit, you know, 270, 280, if not better. Jackson Chourios is a really legit player. And with Bryce Terang, he, you know, out of nowhere a few years ago, you know, he, in his first two major league seasons, he hit 13 home runs combined. He hit 18 last year. And I'll be honest, I came out coming this season being like, look, you guys, I don't know if this guy's going to hit another 18. And I was right in that he's not going to hit another 18. He's going to hit 20, right? Bryce Terang has continued to hit for a ton of power. He's stealing bases. He had 50 steals back in 2024. That was the first year, if I'm not mistaken, one of the first years of the changed bases and all that. He's not going to do that again, but he's very much looking like he's going to hit about 20 home runs, maybe steal 30 bases, score 100 runs and hit like 270. I mean, that's just what that is. And at second base, right? Like one of the positions that has just been the hardest to deal with all season. It's hard not to, you know, really appreciate the value of Bryce Terang, who was a bit of a gamble on draft day, just because you didn't know what you'd get for the power. And the fact that he's still hitting for power is a big deal to me, right? Like even when right out of the gate, when he hit a couple, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. Anyone can hit a couple, but he had, you know, four in March, in April, he had three in May. He's already got three in June. You know, 20 home runs might be light. Might see him go more than that, which is just amazing when you think about where he was in his first two seasons, hitting like six and seven home runs. So yeah, they move up. I doubt anyone in your league is willing to part with either of those guys, but if you've got him, you should be very happy. And yes, Bryce Terang's strikeout rate has jumped way up lately. It's just not something I'm concerned about because it's already kind of making its way back down. But if it stayed up there, I might worry a little about how it affects his overall performance. But mostly I think it would affect his, you know, his stolen bases, because he's just not putting in many balls in play and not getting to first base, whether by hit or by, you know, for, you know, fielder's choice or whatever.
Well, we'll stay in the NL Central. We'll move down to 33 overall, where Pete Crow Armstrong is creeping up the list after a solid couple of weeks. This is a guy who a few weeks ago we were talking about as kind of one of those players that we were just waiting and waiting and waiting. And now he's finally starting to see a little bit of a breakthrough. Scott, what are you seeing out of PCA?
I mean, what aren't we seeing? The dude is just ripping the cover off the ball. The strikeouts are managed right now pretty well. So that's a big deal. But yeah, he's running a ton. He definitely looks like he's probably not going to quite get to the 31 home runs that he had last year, but he could get darn close, right? I think we're looking at a guy who could get to 25. The real question here about Pete Crow Armstrong isn't what the upside is. We saw that for a whole half of a season last year. The question with Pete Crow Armstrong is how often can he tap back into that? Because if you recall last year, what happened was he had it for the first half and then it was just gone. Never came back, never looked like it was coming back. Right? We all waited and waited and nothing happened. He started out slow this year as well. Now he's getting back to that elite level of production where he looks like one of the five best hitters in all baseball, like he did early last season. The question again is going to be how long? How long can he do this? And if he loses it, can he get back to it? I mean, this is the theme I've been talking about all season. It was my whole thing with Jordan Walker. Cool, you got here. I've seen you here before. Can you keep doing it? And can you come back to it when you lose it? So that'll be the real thing that I'm watching for Pete Crow Armstrong and how he takes another jump up in the ranks. He probably comes down a little bit if this, you know, if a month from now we're looking back being like, wasn't that great what he did for a few weeks? So it's a challenge to try to figure out how that's going to go. But and he's a volatile hitter to begin with, but I do like the elevated walk rate that he's had so far this season to give him a little bit of stability. And he is hitting the ball awfully hard, right? Like it's not batted ball luck that's doing this. His hard hit rate is up at 49.7. His average exit velocity is up. You know, everything's looking pretty good. So yeah, 25 home runs, 30 stolen bases, definitely in play. And even if he doesn't get quite there, he should get to like 20 home runs, 25 steals or something like that. Maybe even still 30 steals and like, you know, a 240 something average, right? Which is still a heck of a player. I'll take that as my floor all day. And I think the overall athleticism and talent will keep that floor high. But the way he gets that number might be real up and down. It's a bit of a roller coaster, but you know, you're in it for the thrill.
Well, speaking of roller coasters, next on our list is a guy who, Scott, I'm sure you're enjoying the ride right now as a Tigers fan. He had a little bit of a slow start to the season, but really since the start of May has kind of ramped up and looked outstanding. I picked him up to fill my catcher slot in a couple of leagues when Drake Baldwin went down earlier this season. And that's Tigers catcher Dylan Dingler, up to 39 on the list, kind of creeping up to, you know, Hunter Goodman, Shea Langeliers territory. Tell me what you love about Dingler.
Not quite Shea Langeliers and Ben Rice, right? Those guys are, you know, those are top 10 hitters right now. But Dylan Dingler, a.k.a. Dylan Dinger, he just hasn't stopped hitting, right? So last season we saw Dingler have like a nice second half, right? We were like, oh, hey, you know what? That's pretty good. Maybe there's something here. He hit 13 home runs that year, hit 278. And we're like, yeah, this could be something. He's already got 16 home runs. Dylan Dingler had 16 home runs, so he's already surpassed that. He's pretty close to his RBI total from last year. He's hitting third right now for the Tigers. He's DHing when he's not catching. He catches a ton. The thing I say in the article, like, this might be one of the best current two-way catchers in the league. Like, that was Cal Raleigh, but he's been out. So, you know, definitely right up there in terms of defense plus offense, it's Dylan Dingler. And again, are there things in the profile that maybe scream a little bit luck? Yeah, sure, right? His home run fly ball rate doubled. But it's also important to note that he's hitting a bunch more fly balls, right? So it's up to 44.5% fly balls, back from like 35% last year. And a lot of that is line drives turning into home run or turning into fly balls. And that's actually kind of the best sort of transition, because line drives usually hit very hard. Then when they hit them a little higher, they tend to be, you know, going pretty far. So Dylan Dingler is a guy I was skeptical at first for sure, but he's really improved in just about every way. He's more patient. He makes contact better than he ever has before, hitting the ball hard. Look, he's not like a plus decision maker. And it actually, his overall contact skill isn't very good because he's very aggressive. And like, but that's okay, because the dude's got a ton of power and he's showing, you know, signs of like plus contact at times. So the more he does that, the more he has two tools working for him. Again, the decision-making is probably always going to be low because he's aggressive, but the contact has gotten a lot better. The power is still there. It's actually as good or better than it was last year. There's a lot to like here. And I think he's probably just going to stay in the top 50 or 60 all year, even if he slumps a bit, because I just think there's enough power to keep carrying the profile.
Let's take a look at a guy who has slightly less power, but has risen on the list nonetheless, and that's Ernie Clement, up to number 74 overall. Clement's a guy who has been rising, who has been producing. But Scott, you were telling me pre-show you see some red flags.
Yeah, well, the red flag is that Ernie Clement doesn't hit the ball very hard. And when I say doesn't hit the ball very hard, well, usually that'll be a guy who's like average exit velocity is like 87. Right? Like, yeah, that's not very hard. When I talked about Luke Kuechel and how he kind of concerned me, that's because his average exit velocity was like 85, 84. That is like when pitchers hit, that's about how hard they hit. Over the last 23 games, Ernie Clement is slugging 616 with an 83 something mile per hour exit velocity. That, I mean, roughly speaking, if you or I or any mildly athletic person who has held a baseball before, just with a running start, uncorked the ball as hard as they could, not towards any particular target, that's about how hard he hits it. And just if you've ever been in a baseball stadium and just thought about, okay, I'm standing at home plate, how far could I throw it? It is not over the fence, right? We mortals won't do that. So Ernie Clement does not hit the ball hard at all. But he is scrappy. He puts a lot of balls in play. I think in points leagues, obviously, he's more valuable. And more importantly, with this paltry exit velocity, Ernie Clement has still worked his way into being the number three hitter right now for the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, we've seen a lot of weird players be like 3-4 hitters. If you remember, Andrés Giménez last year spent time as like the number four hitter. Ernie Clement's better than him in most ways. He doesn't steal as much. But, you know, look, Clement could get to double-digit home runs this year. I do think, you know, just barely. He's already got 7, and I still think he'll just barely get there because he just does not hit the ball very hard. But he could certainly still continue to hit, you know, well above what his career average is, .268. There's no reason he couldn't keep hitting like 290, 300 at least for a while. The part, of course, that you need to remember. So I mentioned he was slugging .616 over the last his 23 games or so, which is really how you can define this hot streak. But he also was outperforming his expected WOBA by like 150 points. That is so much. Like, that is a massive overperformance, and that won't continue. The question is, what happens after that, right? So let's say that starts to regulate a little. Does he still look like the slap hitter with batting average and all that stuff? Because if yes, then he stays as like a top 100-ish hitter. If it fades out and he starts hitting too many fly balls, like, he can't hit fly balls, right? Unless they're leaving the yard, he cannot hit fly balls. So if that starts happening or something like that, then it really gets worse. But in the, you know, for the time being, he's hitting third for an underperforming but still good offense and puts a ton of balls in play. I think he is someone that you should be very happy with. And of course, he's eligible like everywhere.
We'll move on to a guy who has popped up at 86th overall on the list. This week's cover boy, it's San Francisco Giants outfielder Jung-Hoo Lee. Scott, talk about what Lee's been doing that you've been liking.
Yeah, well, he hits the ball a little harder than Ernie Clement, but they're similar players in the sense that they slap the ball. They don't hit a ton of home runs, like both of them, again, just barely getting to 10 home runs probably by the end of the year. If Lee was eligible at second base, he'd be ranked right there with Ernie Clement, except at least with Jung-Hoo Lee, the expected stats are a lot better. As of right now, he's just ripping the cover off the ball for one of the hottest baits, you know, one of the hottest offenses in baseball. It's hard to not call someone that when they are trailing 8-1 in the bottom or in the eighth inning and win the game, right? Like, these guys, I mean, Matt Chapman is also a guy that I could have talked about or could have featured, who is, you know, for the longest time, his blurb, Matt Chapman's in the taxi squad, was at some point he's going to go on a hot streak and get ranked. That's now, right? That's now. The question is, how long is that going to last and how bad does he look when it fades? Because he was so bad to start the season. Jung-Hoo Lee, though, look, he's a contact hitter. Normally, I would prefer a guy like Lee to be batting like leadoff, right? Because he's putting a ton of balls in play, getting on base, and then his teammates are letting him around the bases. The problem is there's just another slightly better version of Jung-Hoo Lee is also on this team. It's Luis Arraez, who does a lot of the same things, but like is slightly better at all of them than Lee. But you know, with Lee, he goes up there because look, he's starting against lefties and righties. Now he's batting fifth, which isn't terrible. It's still a place he can rack up some RBI. And again, he's hitting for a ton of average while this is going. I think he just has to be on rosters. He has to be ranked above anyone that you think about cutting for streaming. Obviously you wouldn't be thinking about that right now. He's been one of the best hitters for fantasy, and on the season, he's been a top 70 hitter. Now, injury risk is a big deal. He did play 150 games last year, but he played less than that in 2024. He's already missed some time in 2026. So that's something to consider. And he doesn't have a lot of power, but if you are dying for some ratios, or God, for, you know, if you're in a points league, someone should have scooped him up ages ago. He would have been ranked for weeks for points leagues, but in standard leagues, it's not quite so good, especially when that offense was ice cold for most of May. Yeah, Jung-Hoo Lee, someone to chase after. I don't think there's necessarily another level to his game, right? What I do think is that he is functionally Luis Arraez, Ernie Clement, but in the outfield.
Well, we'll move from a couple of, we'll call them slappy hitters, to a guy who's showing a little bit of power, and that's Jack Caglione, Kansas City Royals outfielder, up to 119 in the list this week. Scott, talk to me about what Jack is doing in Kansas City.
Well, hitting dingers is what he's doing. Well, he's doing a couple things. So number one, Jack Caglione is walking again, right? So walk rate has been a very up and down thing for Caglione. It's something he's doing more right now, which is great. it's, you know, certainly he's played about as many games as he did last season, and he's only got one more home run, but a lot of the other stuff looks a lot better. He's actually up to hitting 275 now. Jack Caglione, even though he was quite terrible to start the season, he's really turned it around, especially since like really the start of June. He just hit, you know, just had a two home run day earlier, but he's hitting the cover off the ball, you know, tons of exit velocity, and just doing, again, taking walks, keeping the strikeouts down. Like it's not low, but it's down a bit, which helps a lot. And again, those are, with Jack Caglione, one of the reasons I said you had to let him go is because he's just an outfielder, right? And he did start off real slow, but with the way this is picking up, I am really excited. The one thing that still worries me a little is some of this batting average, this 275 batting average, it's really being driven by this crazy high line drive rate. And I should have mentioned this, Jung-Hoo Lee. Jung-Hoo Lee's line drive rate is up like 10% from last year. And most of the time when I see a guy who makes a 10, 15% jump in line drive rate, I'm like, that's not real. That's luck, right? And that stuff's going to turn into ground balls or fly balls, and let's see how it turns out. Jung-Hoo Lee, that's actually not the case, because I'm surprised he didn't have higher line drive rates, because he hits the ball just like other guys with crazy high line drive rates, right? He has a similar approaches like Luis Arraez and Ernie Clement, and those guys can support, especially Luis Arraez, he can support high line drive rates just because of his approach, what he's trying to do with the baseball, right? He's not swinging that hard. He's just trying to pop it over the infield and get it to fall in front of the outfield. Those are line drives. So you can support these really high line drive rates. A power hitter like Caglione is less likely to support a 28.3% line drive rate, which if he went a whole season like that would pretty much lead the league in line drives. We just don't see power hitters do this at all because they tend to hit fly balls. So a lot of Caglione's hits are line drives and ground balls. Those can't be home runs, but while they're line drives, they can be base hits. When they turn to ground balls, they won't be. So I'm a little bit concerned there that if the line drive rate starts to regulate, all we see is like the bottom fall out of the average and all that stuff turned to ground balls. But if they turn to fly balls, we got a much better chance at seeing a player who's, you know, like a long-term addition. But, you know, it is worth noting a lot of his fantasy value is just coming from the last like two-ish weeks, right? So I'm not ready to get fully on board yet, but he's showing us a better quality of contact and a better plate discipline right now than he's really showed us since getting called up last year. So that's like that's the good news on Caglione. And again, if he's still floating around out there and you're looking for power, this is one of the best places to find it. I think there's more power coming. The question is, you know, where does the batting average end up when the line drive rate changes? Because it will change. It will go down. Like, he's just not going to hit 28% line drives in the majors. He never did that in the minors, right? That's just not what he tries to do. He's always struggled with ground balls. He really needs to find a way to get more balls in the air. So we'll just have to see how that plays out.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about guys falling down Scott's top 150 hitters list after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford. We're talking hitters on pitcher list with Scott Chu. As always, we're looking through Scott's top 150 hitters list published every week on pitcherlist.com. Scott, let's jump right into the fallers. One of the guys who, was really a top, drafted in the top three rounds almost universally, mostly because of position scarcity, partially because of, you know, before the season, we expected him to hit a lot better than he has so far. It's Ketel Marte, the second baseman for Arizona. He's ranked 38th in the list this week. What do we need to see out of Marte in order to feel better about his fantasy performance?
How about another good week, right? So if you look at his stats right now and you go, it's about a 10-day period in May, you get over a third of his home runs and runs scored, and you get about half of his RBI from that one 10-day period. The rest of the season, he's just been not good, right? Like, sometimes he's been slightly positive value, and then in many other cases he's been a negative value for that week, right? I mean, it's hard, right? So like almost all of his fantasy value, or at least half of it, is coming from this like one insane stretch which is just doing everything. And that terrifies me, because what I need to see is a guy who's just hitting much more consistently, who's getting, you know, quality of contact. The batting average is way down. And look, some of it is a bit of batted ball luck. Like, he's underperforming his ex-WOBA for sure. He's pulling the ball in the air plenty. He's pulling the ball in the air. He's doing a lot of things, but the results just aren't there. And, you know, the quality of contact's down just a little bit in certain ways. I think the batting average should recover. I just would really love it if he could perform more than just this one week. So Ketel Marte does take this big drop. He is 32 years old. That's not super old. Certainly younger than me, but you know, where he's obviously a must roster. He's obviously going to be your starting second baseman. The question is, where does he fall among those second basemen? He started the season as a top one or two second baseman. And now it's like, well, Nate, I mean, I think he's probably top five rest of the way. So it's a drop. I'm not sure how actionable it is, right? There's nothing really to do with it, right? It's just like, okay, well, I thought he was going to be really, really good, but now he just might be like really good. So I still think he can end the year with, you know, another thing playing into this is injury risk. Ketel Marte does tend to miss chunks of the season. He's, you know, it's usually not that much, but it's about 25 games a year. Sometimes a little more that he misses. 2023 he played a full season, but you know, 2024 he missed roughly 25 games. 2025 he misses roughly 35 games. So, you know, it's something else to factor in as well. But yeah, Ketel Marte, still very much your starting second baseman. Now just the question is, how does he stack up against the other ones?
Well, another guy who is kind of in a similar situation where he has just underperformed, and there's nothing that fantasy managers can do but just kind of weather the storm, is the guy ranked 42nd overall, Toronto Blue Jays first baseman Vlad Guerrero Jr. Just not living up to expectations in 2026.
Yeah, he's outside the top 100 hitters in terms of like where he falls on Fangraph's player rater so far this season. He's kind of bounced around between, like, you know, they just gave him a look at the leadoff spot the other day. He started to hit it, like, he's hit some second, some third. They're trying to find anything they can. And look, the plate discipline is great. The ratios are great. That's still going to be there. The question is the power. Right? It's always the power. And there's two things to really note from that. Number one, the average exit velocity is down a tick and a half, right? Like, that's a problem. Now, his swing speed's about the same, so he should be able to generate the same amount of raw power. He's just got a quality of contact issue. And right now, that quality of contact issue is mostly in the fact that it's a lot of ground balls. That ground ball rate's up at 48%. That's not great, obviously. And the other thing is, he's not hitting fly balls with as much authority. He's lost, you know, 2-3 miles an hour, if not a little more, on his average fly ball and line drive exit velocity. The fly balls it's like 2%. And when you combine fly balls and line drives, it's like almost 4% that he's, 4 miles per hour that he's lost on the velocity of those. And the thing about quality contact issues is that they're really hard to sort of like dive into. When it's like a strikeout thing or decision-making thing, you're like, oh yeah, you need to lay off this, you need to do that. Quality of contact, we're usually talking about millimeters against millimeters, like hitting, you know, the bat. If the bat was a couple millimeters in this direction and the ball was a couple millimeters in that direction, it's a different, you know, it's a different at bat. So the micro adjustments that Vlad Guerrero Jr. needs to make can be made, right? He's done it before, right? He's been worse than this at times in the past, particularly with power, and bounced back. The problem is, like, I don't know when that's going to be. And, you know, again, we thought, hey, look, he really turned it on at the end of last season. He's got to be able to beat the 23 home runs he hit in 2025. And now I'm kind of wondering, like, how does he get to 20? He's got three. Vlad Guerrero Jr. has three home runs as of, you know, this recording on June 11th, and by the time this thing comes out. So, like, what then? You know, he has one home run from April 21st to today, right? He hit one back in mid-May against the Tigers, which I actually saw. It was a pitch well outside the zone. He had no business swinging at, and he managed to just put it over the fence. But, like, what, again, not a super actionable move, right? And it doesn't help that the whole team around him has been slow, because at least with a 282 average and a 375 OBP, you'd think this guy would be scoring more runs, having more RBI. He's got 26 RBI. He has two RBI in his last like 10 games, right? He's got four, I think, in his last like 20. It's wild. So, you know, the counting stats aren't there. I don't think you can do anything about this. I don't think he's a great buy candidate unless you can get him for like a guy ranked somewhere in like the 50s or 60s because someone's just done. I do think he can bounce back from this, but I have to readjust my expectations here, and I just don't see how I can continue ranking him as a like top 25, top 30 hitter when I'm sitting here trying to wonder how he's going to finish the 20 home runs. He's got more steals than home runs by a lot, but by percentage wise, a lot. He's got five stolen bases and three home runs. Our Vlad, our sweet round boy, Vlad, has more steals than home runs. 67 games into the season.
About 2 weeks ago, I floated an offer to the Vlad Guerrero manager of Murakami for Guerrero straight up. And then Murakami got hurt, and I rescinded the trade offer out of principle because I don't think it's right to, you know, offer a guy who's healthy and then he goes on the IL. I'm really, really glad that I withdrew that offer because I don't think I would want to make it again.
I wouldn't be doing that right now.
Yeah.
Not unless you're just, I mean, in a points league with a strikeout penalty, it works. Because Vlad Guerrero Jr. is still an elite points league contributor, even with fewer home runs, because he just puts so many balls in play. Dude never strikes out. He's got more walks than strikeouts. Like, all that stuff is still good. It's just the power that's missing.
Well, let's move on to another slumping superstar. Kyle Tucker signs like the biggest deal in baseball from a monetary standpoint this offseason with the Dodgers. And now he is down in the outside the top 50 in your hitters list. He has not been great so far this year. Kyle Tucker ranked 60th this week. Scott, what do we do with Tucker?
I'm not going to let you skip over the other guy that I ranked right next to him. And it's the Gunnar Henderson.
No. Just ignore the man behind the curtain.
So they're interesting to put next to each other because Gunnar Henderson has been very like up and down this season. Like, he showed us this like outburst of power, and then it kind of fell off. And then he kind of brings it back a little bit, and then it falls off. And you're like, what the heck is this guy? Right. And the answer with Gunnar Henderson is I still don't really know. Right. Like, every time he fixes one, it's very much a situation where every time he fixes one thing, he breaks something else. Right. Like, strikeout rate's a lot better and the power's gone. Right. Like, oh, like, yeah, the strikeouts are way up and, you know, the walks are down. Oh, but he hit a home run. Like, none of it makes any sense to me. So he's been really difficult to kind of figure out what to do with. Both he and Kyle Tucker are like just inside the top 100 on most player, I think, for standard league player raters. So with Henderson, he's got the 13 home runs so far this season, but it's worth noting that like a lot of those home runs came in like two little short spurts. And since I want to say like the start of May, he has, let's see, one, two, he has four. So he has four home runs since the start of May. So the power's really fallen off. He's still hitting the ball hard, but he's not hitting it where it needs to go. So he's a challenging guy. Again, not someone you can cut, not anything you do anything with, but you're still trying to figure out what he is. Kyle Tucker, on the other hand, has kind of been the same flavor of bland all season, right? Like, good enough to, like, fine enough as your last outfielder, right? Because he gets a boatload of counting stats because he plays for the Dodgers, right? I mean, even today, right? Today, he's got one hit, a run, and two RBI, and he managed to steal a base. But then he struck out three times, right, here on Thursday. Dude turned one hit and no walks into a run and two RBI, right? He had two balls in play the whole day, a run and two RBI. You know, like, that's not going to happen on most teams. But even batting sixth for the Dodgers, sure, why not? So Tucker's floor is raised up by the fact that even though he's been moved down the batting order to sixth just as of recently, that's for the Dodgers. So it's kind of like fourth or third anywhere else, right? Even higher if it's like a bat, you know, the Royals, right? This is like, I mean, this is basically just batting behind Bobby Witt for the Royals, right? Like, it's your only shot. And there's no way you're getting two RBI batting for the Royals, right? Because Bobby Witt's just one dude. So unless you're the other RBI, you're not getting it. So I think they're both important guys to kind of keep an eye on. And there's actually several guys in this version of the list who just fall. Now, I should remind everyone, I mentioned this in the article, don't pay too close attention to the numbers that are in the table itself. The numbers on the far right are screwed up because I'm an idiot and I messed up the process for making that whole thing work. So now it's actually showing you their ranking compared to where they were 2 weeks ago, right? Not in the last list on June 5th, but actually 2 weeks back on May 28th. So their rankings are relative to that article. That's why a bunch of guys seem like they've moved a ton. Like Dylan Dingler moved up 53 spots, but that's actually sort of in two jumps, right? Josh Young moved up 38 spots, but that was in two jumps. So, and some guys moved up, they technically moved up a little bit, but it was actually more like they moved up and then they moved down. But it's still a net positive because you're looking at it from 2 weeks ago. The only difference I think is Mookie Betts fell like almost all those 49 spots now because I was very tired of it. But with, you know, Gunnar Henderson, Kyle Tucker, guys, but there's several others in this vein who I'm just kind of like, I don't think you can cut them yet, but I don't really know what you should do with them. And I've kind of grouped them all together throughout the list where you can find them. I think one of the biggest sections is like Manny Machado, Eugenio Suarez, and Alex Bregman all find themselves almost outside the top 100, right? Like, you know, the guy ranked right behind them is Curtis Mead, which is me telling you, like, in a shallower league, especially, I can see it like cutting Bregman for Mead. Like, maybe don't yet, because, you know, maybe not. But, you know, if you're desperate, I could see it. Austin Riley's another guy who falls a ton. Michael Garcia, another guy who falls a ton. It's that time. It's that time of the year where we need to start saying, like, look, maybe it just ain't happening. And the better the track record and the better the overall upside, again, the more patient I'll be. Kyle Tucker, when he's on, is a top 10 hitter in all of baseball and has been that many times, right? So I'm willing to extend a ton of rope, right? Gunnar Henderson has been a top 5 hitter in baseball before, right? I'm willing to extend a ton of rope. Now, I ranked them both behind Wilson Contreras because he's hitting and they aren't, right? I mean, that's something to keep in mind. But, you know, there's a lot here to kind of unpack, especially with some of these, you know, veteran guys that, hey, you don't have to just keep holding a candle for them forever, right? Like Austin, I think the biggest ones are the ones that fell outside the top 100 entirely. So that's going to be Austin Riley, Michael Garcia, and Bo Bichette. I ranked them just in front of Jackson Merrill. Those three guys I continue to rank for now. They are all droppable in a 12-team league for the right guy. You know, like if you were to come to me today and say, like, hey, man, I'm really needing power. Austin Riley's been just sitting on my bench, and I want to know if I can go get Jack Caglione or Bryce Eldridge. I'd say, yes, do it. In fact, I ranked them both above them, right? Like, I'm okay with it. Or you're like, hey, you know, I maybe wouldn't do it for, say, like, Kobe Mayo, who makes the back of the list. Kobe Mayo makes the very back of the list. But the plate discipline's still no good. He just happens to be hitting the ball well right now, and he can play third base. So yeah, sure. Why not? You're ranked because you can play third base and someone needs to fill in to play third base. But I'm probably not doing it for those guys. But that next tier up, like, yeah, dude, like if you're just really struggling, you're tired of watching Bo Bichette be bad and you want to go get the big surprise out of Pittsburgh and Nick Gonzalez, in a shallow league, again, I'm not talking about your 15 teamers. They don't have to make these hard decisions, right? If you're in NFBC, you're in TGFBI, you're not making this hard decision. You just sit and you wait because Nick Gonzalez isn't on the wire for you, right? Jack Caglione's not on the wire for you, right? You're picking through scraps, you know? You don't have to make this hard choice. But in the 12-team league where those guys are available, sitting there right now, you know how many times I've been told, like, Carson Bench has been on the wire for people this week. People tell me, oh yeah, he's just out there on the wire. I'm like, what? He's been a top 50 hitter the last like 30 days. He's just out there. Like, yes, go cut good players to get him. Cause he is also good. Right. So like, if that's where you are, it's time to make the tough decision. especially, you know, Riley, Michael Garcia, Bo Bichette, Jackson Merrill, it might bite you. I'm not going to say it can't bite you. I just think even if it does, it won't be that bad. Especially if you're not just doing it for anyone. It's really hard. I always struggle when people say, is this guy cooked? Can I cut this guy? It's always for who? For who? Like sometimes the answer can be yes, right? If you're like, hey, can I finally cut Luke Rayleigh? Yeah, I don't really care who for, right? Like you can just cut him. It's fine. He was hot. He's not anymore. He's just a lefty platoon guy, right? No big deal. But you know, if you're still for some reason holding water for Stephen Kwan or Carlos Cortez, like you don't really need to tell me who you're cutting him for. The answer is yes, it's fine. But when you start talking about guys with real track records of success and, you know, who are still showing some skills here and there, then I need you to tell me who for. And in this case, those guys, I'm not saying just cut them. Don't just cut Bo Bichette, Austin Riley, Jackson Merrill. I'm just saying, I'll ask you who for instead of just saying no. That's where we are. Hopefully that's like descriptive to you all, but yeah, like that's where we are. If you go to the Reddit AMA tomorrow, well, today, when you're listening to this on Friday, and say, hey, can I drop Austin Riley? I will ask you who for. You ask me Luke Rayleigh, I will say yes. Right? That's kind of the difference of where we are right now with those guys versus regular old waiver wire fodder.
Well, we touched on a lot of names there that kind of rounded out our list of fallers for the week. Is there anybody else that you want to talk about before we sign off for the night?
Yeah, let's talk about a couple of guys. You know, number one, guy who gets ranked towards the back of the list, Will Smith hitting the IL. I think that'll be effective as of the time you listen to this. Dalton Rushing. He's a guy who gets ranked, definitely a high-end catching streamer. Maybe more than that. We'll see how much time if he can hit really well. He really had that one flash early in the season and then it kind of fell off and he just started hitting again. So this injuries are never well-timed. I don't want people to be hurt, but for Dalton Rushing, it's a great time to get more plate appearances because he's seeing the ball really well. So it's unfortunate it had to be because of injury. It's fortunate that he's getting more plate appearances. So he's definitely a streamer who could turn into more. Definitely a guy I'd be looking at. a couple guys that are sort of at the back of the taxi squad for right now, you might have questions about. Cole Kerrig. He just got called up for the Rockies. He is someone who I think can give you very strong ratios, especially while he's in Coors, but he just doesn't have enough power and he hits too many ground balls for that to like turn into true power. But in points leagues, maybe I could see it. And definitely if you need some speed, he's a good streamer. So if you're in like a deeper league, you lost O'Neill Cruz, you need an outfielder with speed. I think Cole Kerrig could be that. He's someone to keep an eye on. Ryan Ward might get a little bit more playing time. He's hit the ball somewhat well when he's been active for the Dodgers. And again, just getting a part of the Dodgers lineup is always a plus. So that's a couple of guys. Caleb Durbin's hitting the ball well. I don't know how much I care yet. So he's mentioned in the taxi squad, but if you're dying for a third baseman, maybe that's an answer for you. Other guys in the back of the list. A guy I'm just going to tell you to cut now. I think I mentioned him last week too. Chandler Simpson. He's just got to go. He's not running. He's not hitting. There's nothing there. The only reason you're going to hold him is because you have this massive stolen base weakness on your roster. And the only other option would be like Jacob Marcy, who's also only ranked because you might have a very specific need. But I could very easily interchange either of those guys with basically anyone on the taxi squad that I have any positive thoughts for. Chase DeLauder, another guy who's really, you know, he's ranked in the 130s. He's in that droppable range. You know, if you do need a streaming middle infielder or you need speed, David Hamilton is out there. He's been running a lot and the Brewers just cannot stop hitting the ball. So David Hamilton's a good fit. And let me see, is there any other guy I wanted to call out? One more. It's Zach Gieloff. And it's because I'm telling you, I do not believe in Zach Gieloff long-term, but he is hitting the ball really well right now. He's got a pretty darn good hit streak going. I think Vegas kind of bumped that up a little bit. The hit streak itself had been fairly boring before he got to Vegas. But look, he is hitting the ball well right now. He is eligible at second, third, and outfield in certain formats. And you may have just lost Ronald Acuña Jr. or O'Neill Cruz, and you need some speed and power. And maybe if you had O'Neill Cruz, you just don't give a crap about the ratios. Zach Gieloff can maybe give you some lift until you find something better.
Or you're sitting and sitting on a three outfield league where you lost both Acuña and O'Neill Cruz, and you're just praying for rain for the next week across Major League Baseball until these guys get healthy, because that's two-thirds of my outfield.
Yeah, two-thirds of your outfield and like two-thirds of your top – it's like a third of your top six picks.
Yeah, no big. That's a third of my production in this points league specifically.
Why did you draft guys that were going to get hurt, idiot?
For what it's worth, I lobbied against drafting O'Neill Cruz.
To who, yourself?
No, I run it with another guy. So I have a co-manager who was very high on O'Neill Cruz. And to his credit, he was right. I hope he's not listening. Justin, if you're listening, that's the only time I'm ever going to say you were right publicly. But yeah, he lobbied for O'Neill Cruz and looked great up until this week. So now we have to replace him.
I mean, it's still going to, he still can well outperform his,
you
know, what you spent on draft day. I think the bigger question is just Ronald Acuña Jr. Look, I don't rank him in like the low 20s because I don't think he can play. I do it because he's hurt all the time. All the time. So it's really worth noting that he's hurt a lot and misses a lot of time. And that's why I don't rank him higher. When healthy, he's way higher, but he's not healthy all the time. And I have to bake that in.
Scott, another great podcast. Tell the people where to find you and your work.
Yeah, you can find me at If the Chew Fits on Twitter. I have posted a few things lately, mostly rolling charts that are very fun. A really cool thing on James Wood, if you want to check him out. I'm also on Blue Sky, scottchew.pitcherlist.com, which also has that post about James Wood and how he's really fixed one of his most critical weaknesses. You can also see that in my article if you'd like, but you got it like 2 days early if you follow me on those platforms. So feel free to do so, and you can always reach out to me on there, ask me questions. And we've got the Reddit AMA coming up Friday, today. So feel free to check out there too if you just want to ask questions directly about your team. I'll answer questions on any of those platforms. And of course, in our lovely Discord, they get the first bite of the apple. So if they burn me out, I don't do as much on the other platforms, but I'm on the Discord constantly, just answering as many questions I can about what people are thinking. Just not about pitchers. I don't know any of those guys except for Tarek Skubal, who's back on Saturday, baby.
Skubal's back. That's scary. Maybe the Tigers will win some games, string some together. We'll see.
Scary for the Guardians, maybe.
I'm Brett Ford. You can find me at Fade That Man on social media. Find me obviously on Hacks and Jacks podcast. Under rostered players in points leagues column comes out on Monday on pitcherlist.com. Listen to QB List podcast as well. QB List Fantasy Football, the fantasy football sister site of Pitcherlist. And other than that, make sure you find me in the Pitcherlist Discord, ask questions and interact. I less useful as a fantasy mind and more useful for just witty banter. So there's a lot of that in the Pitcherlist Discord as well. As always, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate every single one of you guys. For Scott, I'm Brett, signing off. We'll see you later.